We're going to start a lesson on a series of lessons, that is, on the Beatitudes. This is in Matthew chapter 5, which we will not spend a lot of time on because it's only one verse that we're reading. Matthew chapter 5 is where this list is found. Of course, beginning with the poor in spirit, which is what was read for us a moment ago. People who are reading scriptures, you're not going to get it that easy the whole time. You're not just reading one verse. So I'll come up with more stuff for you to read for the scripture reading. Why are they called the Beatitudes? This is what I wonder, because there's not really any indication in the text why they'd be called this. There's no word that is even like attitude. Now, the idea of attitude is what I've heard before, that you need to be like these attitudes, but that's not it. It comes from the Latin phrase, the Latin word that is translated as blessed in our Bibles. Most of you almost certainly, does everybody have blessed in Matthew 5:3? Blessed are the, blessed are the, blessed are the. Does anybody not have blessed? Anybody have happy? Anybody have fortunate? No, everybody has blessed. Wow, universal translation, sweet. This is where the Latin word beatus, or there's several different forms of it, that's where we get this title, Beatitudes. And like many things, this probably started several hundred years ago. People started calling these the Beatitudes because of that Latin word, and it just stuck. So now for us, we don't use Latin, and most of us don't have any idea about the Latin stuff. It's just one of those things that's gone. So this now doesn't make any sense. Beatitudes, why? Well, that's stupid. It's from the Latin phrase that means blessed or happy. Now, the Greek word here is makarios, which you don't care about. Happy, blessed, as a noun, it can depict somebody who receives divine favor. And I want to focus on that last portion of the definition for a moment. This idea of one who receives divine favor. Now, happy or blessed, blessed is a pretty good translation. This was a common word in the first century Mediterranean culture, not just Israel, but the surrounding Mediterranean area, Ephesus, Turkey, that sort of area. This was a common word. Why? Because most fates, and by fate I mean things that happened to you, the things that went on in your lives, most fates were related in some way to the various gods. We got all sorts of Roman and Greek gods at the time, and most of the things that happened in your life were related to, well, either I've displeased this god or I've done something good in the eyes of this god. And so this word makarios, one who receives divine favor. That is, I have done something and I have now been blessed by some sort of divine being, Artemis, Zeus, Ares, whoever, some god. And Jesus is using this term very specifically. These are those who will be happy or fortunate. Fortunate would be another good translation of this word. Fortunate are those who, blank, blank, blank. Jesus is describing qualities of those who will receive this divine favor, who will be blessed by the gods, so to speak. Fortunate are these people. Now, these nine things, because there are nine in the Beatitudes, this list in Matthew chapter 5, these are iconic. That is, this is one of the lists that people know that stick in people's minds. I don't know why that is. Many of these things are not things the world would want to have or be. Not all of them. Some of them are. But some of these, many of these, are not things that we would consider to be fortunate or happy circumstances. Blessed are the blank, blank, blank. Well, I don't want to be that. Jesus is describing something countercultural. I'd use the word hipster. The Greeks didn't have any concept of hipster. That's our concept. But that's really what it is. Things that are countercultural, things that go against the grain, things that are not the way that the world at large would want or think about. It's kind of that way. Things that are against the norm. Happy are the unhappy is a phrase that I've seen a lot and I'm studying for these lessons. Happy are the unhappy. Blessed those who receive divine favor for these unfortunate circumstances. Fortunate are the unfortunate. That's what Jesus is describing in the Beatitudes. But really, this is just part of the greater theme of the Sermon on the Mount, right? Doing things differently than the world would expect. And isn't that the theme in really the whole Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5 and 6? When you give, don't do it this way that other people give. When you pray, don't do it this way that other people pray. Etc., etc. You have heard that it was said, do this, this, but I say to you, do this instead. That's the theme of the Sermon on the Mount. don't do things the way the world would do things. Don't do things even the way that the religious elite in Jerusalem would do things. Jesus is explaining to them a different way of thinking. Something that is indeed countercultural. Something that it goes against the grain of what we would expect to be normal. And the Beatitudes are no different than that. So the first one, Matthew 5:3. Blessed, fortunate, happy are those who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. As we think about this verse, I want to start with this question. We're not going to answer it immediately, but just be thinking about it. What is the currency of the soul? When he talks about poor, we're talking about having value, having worth, ways of measuring worth or value or wealth, ways of measuring how much stuff you have. So what is the way that the Spirit measures value and worth? What is the currency of the soul? Think about that as we go through this lesson. We will answer it eventually. Let's focus on this word poor, the Greek word tokos, literally reduced to beggary. It means what it just as a normal, ordinary word, poor. One who doesn't have a lot of stuff. But it's not just not having a lot of stuff. It's that you are reduced to begging for the things that you need. Not begging for the things that you want, but you do not actually have enough to survive. You don't have enough to maintain. And so you're reduced to begging for what you need. By implication, a person of low condition, which is a nice way of saying it. This is, again, not an uncommon word in the Gospels themselves. Jesus uses this word a lot, poor. He talks about the poor quite a bit in his ministry. Certainly, though, most of the time that Jesus uses this word, tokos, he's talking about those who don't have physical goods, those who don't have material possessions, the ways that the world measures worth and value. Those that don't have a home, those that don't have clothes, those that don't have food, those that don't have money. Most of the time, that's what he's describing when he talks about the poor in the Gospels. So this is why he has to add the qualifier here, one who is reduced to beggary. How? In spirit. He's not talking about those who are begging out on the street corner. He's not talking about those who can't buy their next meal. He's not even talking about those who don't have a job. He's talking about those who are, as we might say, reduced to beggary of the soul, of low spiritual condition. One without the goods and valuables of the Spirit. Which brings us back to our question, what is the currency of the soul? How does the soul measure value and wealth? And I thought about this a lot, and as I was thinking about it and studying it, this is what I came to. Pride is the currency of the soul. The way of measuring value in the spirits, those who are poor in spirit are those who do not have a lot of pride or self-value. Those who do not have a high estimation of themselves, those who do not think well of themselves. And we're going to come around to this point from a number of different angles. What factors contribute to our self-worth and pride? Well, consider for a moment the person who, quote-unquote, has it all together. The person who is not poor in spirit, not reduced to beggary of the soul, the person who has a lot of pride, self-esteem, self-worth, what factors go into that? He's probably financially independent, good health probably, healthy relationships, good job/hobbies. This is the kind of person we want in our churches, right? The person who has it all together, who's not going to be a drain on others, who has a good estimation of himself, who feels good about himself because of the circumstances of his life. And yet it is ironic, this is exactly the kind of person who will probably not be poor in spirit. The person who has it all together is probably rich in spirit. One who has a high level of pride, a high level of self-worth. One who thinks about himself well. And when we talk about the poor in spirit, blessed are those who are not like that. Happy or fortunate are those who do not have a lot of pride, who do not have a lot of self-worth, who do not have a lot of self-esteem. Blessed or fortunate or happy or those who receive divine favor are the ones who feel bad about themselves. It's not the same as humble. It's different than humble. We'll come back to that. Who did Jesus habitually go to in his ministry more often than not? Did he go to the wealthy? A couple of times he did, but more often than not, who did he go to? The tax collectors, the sinners, the downtrodden, those who are outcast, those who did not belong. In a word, Jesus went to the poor in spirit. Not the poor physically, but those who do not have the value of the soul. Isaiah 61, 1 and 2, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives. And this is, I think, describing poor in spirit or the circumstances that would more often than not lead to one being poor in spirit. The opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. The idea of the Lord's favor would go very well with this Greek word makarios, divine favor or blessing. And the day of vengeance of our God to comfort all who mourn. Unlike the person who has it all together, this is the person who is poor, the brokenhearted, the captive, those who are bound, those who mourn. These are the life circumstances that more often than not would lead to us being poor in spirit, though not always. The poor, the brokenhearted, the captives, those who do not have much pride or self-worth, and at least in the way that the world measures such things. There's going to be an area of nuance here. We're talking about things in a nuanced way, right? It's not all of one, all of the other. There are probably people who have a lot of material goods who are poor in spirit, and there are probably people who don't have a lot of material goods who are rich in spirit, who have a lot of measure of self-worth and pride. But pride gets in the way of proper self-understanding in the sight of God. Why are those who are poor in spirit blessed? This is backed up empirically and historically. We're going to look at a couple of things. Empirically, you could think about evangelistic efforts across the globe today. By percentages, what economic social class responds more to the gospel? Just by percentages, you can go across the board globally, not just in the Church of Christ either. This applies to evangelistic efforts of all faiths. The group that responds the most tends to be those who don't have a lot physically. Just is what it is. Okay, that's just the way the world works. Because again, pride gets in the way of God. And it tends to be, though not always, it tends to be that those who do not have as much have less pride, have less self-esteem, have less self-worth. Historically, the kind of people who responded positively to Jesus and the apostles, 1 Corinthians 1, 26 through 29, consider your calling. These are the Christians who were in Corinth, the people who had responded positively to the message of God. Consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. He chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing the things that are. Why? And here's where we get to the bottom, the point of the whole thing. So that no human being may boast in the presence of God. It is not about you. It is not about how good you are, how rich you are, how healthy you are, how wealthy you are, what your relationships are like. It's not about anything that you've done. Because those things tend to get in the way of understanding who you are in the sight of God. Those who have more success in this world tend to be blinded to the things of the next. And so he says here, it is not those who are noble, not those who are powerful, not those who are wise, not those who are strong. That's not who responded to the gospel message in Corinth. Who responded was the weak, the low, the foolish, the despised. So why will the poor in spirits be happy or blessed? In what way will they receive divine favor? And again, you just go back to the verse. It says what it says. Matthew 5:3. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Why? For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's the ones to whom the kingdom of heaven belongs. Is this a physical or spiritual promise? Physical or spiritual? Somebody say. It's kind of both, isn't it? It's kind of both, right? Yes, there is a primary definition, I think, of spiritual blessing. But if it's true that those who tend to be poor in spirit are those who tend to not have as much stuff physically, this is also a physical promise of a place where you can belong and find the support and help physically of those who are like-minded, of those who also have the same condition of being poor in spirit. So yes, I think the primary definition, of course, is spiritual, thinking about heaven. But the kingdom of heaven here on this earth does have some physical benefits, particularly to those who more likely than not are poor in spirit, those who are poor in physical things. So this promise is not just spiritual, though I think it is primarily. And that answers the second question, is this immediate or a future promise? Again, both. Ultimately, he's probably looking forward to the hereafter, after judgment, the kingdom of heaven in its fullest realization. And yet this is still an immediate promise that those who are poor in spirit now, theirs is the kingdom of heaven now. The promise is a place where one has value and worth, not derived from earthly means, but derived from spiritual things. That is the promise. This beatitude, this thing that Jesus is saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, because theirs is a place where they will have good value. Where they will have an appropriate level of their own understanding of what they're worth. Pride and self-esteem that comes not from material things, but from spiritual things. Is it impossible to be poor in spirit and have the goods of this life? No, I don't think so. We could think about those who have the goods of this life, who are rich in the world, and yet still are poor in spirit. But that's going to be the exception, not the rule. Is it possible to be poor in terms of the world yet not be poor in spirit? Again, sure it is. Sure, it's possible to be poor in spirit, to have low pride and self-esteem. I think I said that wrong. Sure, it's possible to be poor in this world, to not have the goods of this world, and still think a lot about yourself, and still have pride and self-worth, right? Those are things that are possible, but these, again, are going to be the exception and not the rule. More often than not, the people that respond to the message of God are the people that don't have as much, because that leads to a lower sense of self-value. That's what we're talking about here. Do you think highly of yourself? Do you have a lot of pride? Do you have a lot of measure of self-worth? That is what is going to get in the way of you being in the kingdom. Matthew 18:1-4. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Now, how does this relate to our current discussion? From where does a child's sense of worth come? We've been talking about this in our parenting class. Plug the parenting class. You should come if you have kids or grandkids. A child's sense of worth, a child's sense of value, comes from the parents. It comes from the way that the parents interact with each other. It comes from the way that the parents interact with the child. A child thinks about themselves in direct relation to those who have this are in the center of his life, to those who have the most control over his life. A child's sense of self-worth does not come from himself or herself. Gideon is going to think about himself probably how Tracy and I think about him. He's going to think about himself probably in direct relation to how Tracy and I treat each other. This is, I think, part of what Jesus is talking about in here. Stop deriving your sense of self-worth from yourself, because that's not where it comes from. Your sense of pride should not come from what you've accomplished on this earth. Your sense of pride should not come from your job or your wealth or your cars or your house or your relationships. That's not where pride and self-worth come from? They come from the one who made you, or at least they should. Remember, the Beatitudes were in many ways designed to be countercultural, to inherently not make sense to the world. And that's what Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 1, a lot of the things about 1 Corinthians 1, that this was foolishness to the world. It doesn't make sense to the world. This is like a lot of scripture, designed to not make sense to those who do not have God in their lives. In this sense, culture would have you believe that your sense of self-value should come from yourself, and it should not. Your sense of self-value should not come from yourself. It should come because you know that God thinks you're valuable. You should have pride, not because of anything you've done, but because of what God has done for you. You should have pride because of what Jesus and God think about you. Namely, that you are loved, you are valuable, you are precious. Precious enough for what? For the creator of the world to die for you. You recognize that of yourself, you have no value. But you have value because God says you have value. And as the creator of the universe, what he says is true. God's world clearly teaches something different than what the world would have you believe. Your value comes directly from God. This is the last slide here. Those who understand this are those who belong in God's kingdom. The beatitude, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who do not have the value and currency of the spirit, which I believe is pride. Blessed are those who do not have pride, who do not have self-worth. Why? For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those who understand that their worth comes from God. Those who understand that their sense of self-esteem comes because God says that you are valuable. That is who belongs in the kingdom. And that is who we will be with in eternity. So the question that must be, and it will be with all of these beatitudes, the question must be, are you poor in spirit? What is your level of pride? How much self-value do you have? But it's not even just that, how much pride, how much self-value. The question's one level deeper. What is the source of your pride? Is it your car or your skills or your job or your house or your family? What is the source of your measure of self-worth? If it's not God, then maybe you need to rethink your position in the kingdom. Recognize, and this is the gospel message in a nutshell, recognize that you need God, but that God thinks you're valuable enough to work for your soul. Recognize that, humble yourselves enough to submit to his will, and come to the one who gives you value.